Tonight, we catch up with Pretty Late favorite Representative Robert Martwick. Then later, we'll get a breakdown on the AVN con from Brian Altimer. But first, we'll get more info on the Blackhawks loss from Judd Surratt. All that and more right now on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez.
I am. See, I had a bad feeling about number 13. I didn't think it was going to be, but that shouldn't mean anything. I think there are other things at play. I'm guessing the host and analyst for the pre and post game Blackhawks WGN, Judd Surratt's on the line. Hey, Judd, how are you doing?
I'm good, Patty. Why'd you have a bad feeling about 13?
Because 13's an unlucky number. But that doesn't have anything to do with sports, right? That's superstition and stuff.
No, they don't believe in that stuff.
Not at all. None of them are
superstitious.
No, none of them are superstitious. None of them are wearing the exact same pair of socks I've been wearing for 15 years, right?
Oof.
You don't want to.
Those fans are on high in the dressing room, if that's the case.
Yeah, that would be one hell of a stink in there. Did I hear correctly that one of the players did not show up this morning for the warm-up skate?
He was late.
Okay.
He was not there on time for the morning skate, and that is Richard Ponick. He did eventually skate with the team afterward. What is affectionately known as a bag skate, where you're skating your bag off, baby. And so assistant coach Mike Kitchen put him through the paces. Richard Ponick did go through warm-up, but I think there's something bigger at play. It's, you know, what do you stand for as a team? What do you stand for as an organization? And Richard, he violated a team rule. And in the bigger picture, Joel Quenneville felt it was best that he scratched him tonight. We'll see if he ends up playing tomorrow night in Florida, and I think that's still a question mark. And that actually played a small role in a Blackhawks demise tonight.
I would think so, because that changes the lineup and what, you know, I think Coach Q, like, sort of, it looked like he thinly veiled, you know, that the Predator, the Panthers, who did they play tonight? I'm sorry. It wasn't
the Lightning.
The Lightning have a deep bench, you know, that they had the resources for that. And that sounded a little bit like maybe a slap at the player that couldn't play tonight.
Well, I don't know about that, but I think it is a testament to how good Tampa Bay is, and it's basically part of the reason that the Blackhawks have gone on a run, why they won 12 consecutive games. You heard it probably ad nauseum from Troy, John, and I, talking about what's called a four-line rotation, where Joel can basically throw out all four of his lines, home and road, and throw them out in a variety of situations where he felt like he was confident and he could trust what he was going to get. But because the Blackhawks scratched Ponick, and then earlier today, they made a trade. They sent Ryan Garbutt to Anaheim in exchange for a kid named Jiří Sikáč, who was making his way from the West Coast all the way across country, and he'll join the Blackhawks. He should be in the lineup tomorrow. You were forced, basically, to play seven defensemen, and one of those guys, Rob Scuderi, who I guarantee during his long NHL career has probably never played wing, well, he moves up there. He plays wing. You don't have the same rhythm. You don't have the same continuity that you would normally have. So it takes away from the energy and what you can do as a team. And then it's only exacerbated when you have to play from behind. That's the other thing that makes it so difficult. It is hard to win in the National Hockey League when you fall behind. One of the reasons the Blackhawks went on this run is they got off to great starts and typically had scored the first goal. They did tonight. But Tampa was able to counter quickly, and the Blackhawks just can get back into it.
Right. So later in the game is when something like that can be a crucial element. And yeah, it's not. But so, how is there an excuse as to why he didn't show up this morning? Was there anything?
None that I'm aware of.
Can you imagine?
Just wasn't on time.
Yeah. Can you imagine playing for the Blackhawks and your alarm doesn't go off? Like, at that point, you just go, I got into a car accident, and you just throw yourself over the hood of somebody's car that's moving.
Unfortunately. You know, it's not uncommon. I mean, I've heard this, you know, it's happened for a number of different players in different organizations. I remember last year, actually, this happened with Alexander Ovechkin, who's a star in the league, and Barry Trotz, who has been in the league for a long time, the head coach of the Washington Capitals. He said, listen, you know, we're not going to make an exception. He violated a team rule, and he's going to sit out, even if it costs the team in the long run the game. And there are bigger things at play, and that's why Barry and Joel have won a lot of games in this league.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I you know, you did it. You broke it. You got to clean it up. I don't know. That's not really the right analogy. But it makes sense to me. I mean, you know, you don't get to play. It's those rules is rules.
Yeah, no, that's true. You know, and I think, you know, the other issue for the Blackhawks is they've gone through this incredible run. There are just going to be some times during the course of an 82-game season you're not going to have it. And they were outworked and outbattled tonight by the Tampa Bay Lightning. Corey Crawford put in another magnificent effort. He gave the team an opportunity. They had a couple of chances in the third period on the man advantage. Really couldn't get anything done. And so they'll move on and see if they can start another winning streak in Florida.
So we're playing the Panthers next. And, you know, presumably, you know, now that the nice thing about not having the, you know, there's nothing nice about not having the streak anymore, but the pressure's off for, you know, that sort of bar, I guess. I don't know. There's nothing good about it.
Well, you know what, Patty? I think that these guys have been very measured and they've kept the whole thing in perspective the entire time. I don't think anybody's doing backflips that they went on a franchise record winning streak. Don't get me wrong. I think that they're proud that they were able to accomplish it. The big goal is obviously to win the Stanley Cup. But
right.
The immediate goal is to get yourself into the playoffs. And with the way the National Hockey League is, especially in the Western Conference, because of the salary cap, there is so much parity that just getting into the playoffs is a feat in and of itself. And because the Blackhawks went on this run, they put themselves in a better position to be in that postseason tournament. They haven't accomplished anything yet. And I was just looking at the standings before I came on. As well as they have played this year, and they're currently leading the Central Division, the Blues, who are in third place, are only 5 points behind them. They're going to see St. Louis on Sunday.
See, and I think that there's an important thing you said is that they've been very measured about their success so far, which is what makes them a Stanley Cup championship team. So I think that's crucial for everything going forward. This is exciting.
It is exciting, but you know, I think that is absolutely part of their success, Patty, and they have gone, you know, basically one game at a time through this whole thing. Hey, it's great. Let's win this tonight. Let's see what we can do tomorrow. And that's what they have understood about this streak. It's great. It's terrific that we've accomplished it, but they've basically gone one game at a time and kept everything in perspective and kept everything measured because they understand what the goal is. And throughout this run, you know, even when they were winning 5 straight, 6 straight, 10 straight, 11 straight, 12 straight, they always talked about the fact that there was another level to their game. They realized they could be a lot better, and they know what it takes, obviously, to win a championship. So even though they went on this terrific run, they know how they have to play and what has to be better.
Right, and the next thing are the Panthers. So thank you. So, Jed, will you check in with us again when you have time? I appreciate you jumping on right now.
Patty, anytime.
Oh, fantastic. All right, well, then maybe we'll talk to you after the Panthers. Are we on?
Okay.
When are they playing the Panthers? Saturday?
Tomorrow.
Oh, tomorrow. Well, if you're up for it, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay, you got it.
Look at that. I already booked. Craig, is okay if I book him? All right, cool. We'll talk to you tomorrow night. If you're up
all
for
right.
it. If you feel like, you know, whatever, I got to go. It's Friday night. I want to do something else. Just let us know.
Patty, I'm in.
Ah, wonderful. All right, Jed Surratt. Tune in tomorrow night. The Blackhawks on WGN. Have a good night, Jed.
See ya.
Thanks, bye. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. And last 2 days have been interesting announcements from Springfield, in particular, when it comes to Governor Rauner's office. Representative Robert Martwick joins us live in the Allstate Showcase studio. And I got an email yesterday asking if we could talk to you about the governor's plan for CPS or suggestion for CPS. Oh, wait, did we have a listener that wanted to make a comment? Oh, Representative Martwick, do you mind if I take a call from a listener about the
Not
Blackhawks?
At all.
One second.
Yeah, of course.
Hey, Ron, I didn't mean to ignore your call. I just realized you were there. I wasn't ignoring you. I swear.
Hey, how are you? I'm going to be brief. You know, Patty, one of the things that I listen to you all the time is that you're very logical about your questioning, and I'm surprised you didn't ask Judd. And you know, these are professional grown hockey players, but they're out of town or in a different city. They all stay at the same hotel. Well, when they had this early morning skate or whatever it was, why didn't they get on the team bus or the bus? So the bus, you know, and where is so and so? And then to go back to the room, it gives the guy overslept. That's
Ron, you are pumped up about this. Yes, I didn't think about that because I'm not sure how it works in other towns. I don't know if that makes sense that they would all be on the same bus, but if. At the same time, it's like if you didn't make it out to the bus on time, same idea as you didn't make it to practice on time. You know, if you did,
yeah.
I'm just saying. Yeah, that's a good question. We'll see if we can get an answer for you. All right, Ron?
Yep.
All right, thanks. Have a good night. Bye-bye. Well, you know, speaking of missing the bus, Governor Rauner suggests that the state of Illinois take over CPS. Is that the plan? Basically forcing them into a bankruptcy?
Yeah. So, I mean, of course, the governor had a big press conference, and he suggested that that the state take control of the Chicago Public Schools, which, of course, would be a huge change from what we currently have. So currently, the school board of the city of Chicago is chosen entirely by the mayor with no oversight from the city council, no vetting process, no confirmation process, and no accountability to the taxpayers or the voters in Illinois. And so what the governor said, well, that is a complete failure, so we have to do something completely different.
And even worse.
What we'll do is we'll have the governor appoint a school board that is completely accountable to no one but him.
Right.
So it's the exact same thing. It's just instead of the mayor appointing the school board, the governor will appoint the school board, and that will solve all of our problems.
Yes, and because he is the governor, he's already doing a great job when it comes to being a leader in so many other areas.
Well, and
was that too smarmy? That was a little smug right there. Hold on a second. Since he is doing a great job leading the state in other areas. No, I can't do it.
That was far more sincere.
Was it? Okay. I'm trying.
Well, and let me talk in all seriousness here. The situation with the Chicago Public Schools is a crisis of epic proportions. We're $480 million short of revenue. And if we don't get this revenue, we're talking about laying off in the middle of a school year 5,000 teachers. This is not something that can happen. It must be averted at all costs, right? And so Illinois and every other state and every other government body has had come across these crises all the time. This is not new for government to have a crisis like this, right? This one is big. When it happens and when leaders are serious about solving this, what they do always in the history of our country, the way that they solve these problems is they drop all of the stuff they're bickering about and they say, okay, let me call the guys from the other side of the aisle. Let's sit down and say, guys, we got to solve this crisis now. So let's find a plan. Let's find something you can live with, something I can live with. Let's get through this crisis, and then we can get back to arguing about the best way to move forward. That's how you handle it. What did he do? He held a press conference saying, I'm taking charge. Ugh. So the only thing I can think is really that this was not a serious endeavor, because you'll never get it passed if you just say, this is what I'm doing.
Right. It's not a unilateral decision. You can't just step in. It has to be approved by the Senate and by the House of Representatives.
Right. And he never came to us and made a case. Either it's a publicity stunt or it's another failure of his to understand the way government actually works. Him being the CEO saying, I'm in charge, I've made decisions, and that's all there is to it. That's not how it works.
Can we talk about that for a minute? Because I've talked to you about this before, and you had mentioned, when people run for office and they want to go into, one of these higher, the governor of Illinois without any previous political experience. How important is it to understand how the General Assembly works? When you develop that, people say, I'm tired of lifelong politicians getting into government. We need someone like, Rauner, like Trump, like the governor of Michigan.
Well, I would hope that if anything, this last year would show that that's a mistake, right? I mean, if I need my appendix removed, I'm not going to go to Bruce Rauner because he's a successful businessman. If I'm wrongly accused of a crime, I don't want Bruce Rauner to represent me because he's a successful businessman. He is very good at making money, but that does not make him an expert in all things.
Right.
And clearly what the last year has shown is that he doesn't know how to govern. He does not know how to work with people on the other side of the aisle to get things done, because here we are a year later and no budget. And no effort at compromise on his side, nothing legitimate. And so I believe that you should find people for these serious positions that have had the experience in government, so they understand how it works and they can get things done. And it doesn't matter what your view is, whether you're a Democrat, if you're a Republican, you're an independent, you're a moderate, I don't care. but if you have experience, you'll work to get things done. Jim Edgar was a great governor in Illinois. He was a Republican. I have the greatest respect for him because he was a Republican who worked with the Democratic legislature and got stuff done.
Well, because it seems as though not having that experience, they don't seem to understand what the consequences might be. In particular, when you don't negotiate, when you say, well, I'm not going to pass, unless you address the issues that I have, which are pension reform and workman's comp and these kinds of, you know, the agenda that the governor has, well, the consequences, and right, you know, for the last 9 months, people didn't really even feel the effects of the budget impasse, right? They noticed when they weren't going to pay out for the lottery.
Right.
Right? Those are the ones. But there are people losing services all over the state, and they're suffering in silence because they don't have the resources to be loud about it.
We're experiencing devastating cuts right now. Imagine just in the city colleges, right? This doesn't include all of the state universities, but just in the city colleges system alone, there are 4,000 students who did not receive their MAP grants, 1,200 of which did not return to college.
Right. And what you know, when you stall out in your education, that has a significant impact in your future. We're going to take a quick break here and continue our conversation with Representative Robert Martwick. You're listening Pretty Late on WGN 720. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. And Illinois is in a state of disrepair. See what I did there? Because we're a state and it's not... We're hanging out with 19th District Representative Robert Martwick. And we had a listener on the line who is a regular caller. Joe, give us a call back. We will take your call and put you on the air to talk about CPS teacher tenure and the problem there. But we'll address that if you call. And then if you don't, we'll talk about it later, maybe if we have time. Because
sure.
The governor thinks that he can fix the public schools in Chicago by just taking it over. So that's fun.
Yeah.
And then today he announced that he's willing to work with Senate President Cullerton. But then, like, moments later, President Cullerton said that's not necessarily the case.
Well, and you know, what the governor does is he constantly, it seems like every move that he makes, he'll come almost all the way
right.
at times. And then he always slips the poison pill in. Right.
Right.
And so this time it was, you know, it was elimination of some collective bargaining rights, which he always tries to do. Everything with him is about eliminating collective bargaining rights. And listen, I will say this. I respect the fact that he believes that that is the path forward. That is his belief. It's not an illegitimate belief, but it's not a belief that I subscribe to or clearly by public opinion that most of the state subscribes to. I mean, you've got 71 members of the House of Representatives, a supermajority in the Senate, and we support collective bargaining rights. I personally believe that collective bargaining rights are a right that is essential to a democracy. People in a democracy, we live in a system where we have the right to collectively assemble and make our lives better. To say that we should pass laws that limit your ability to bargain for a better workplace and therefore bargain for a better life, to me, that's not democracy at all. So I'm a big supporter of collective bargaining rights, and I think it's a freedom that should be maintained.
Well, you know, a lot of people will say, you know, those that are not in unions, and I've never heard someone in a union say, you know, we really should give up some of our collective bargaining rights.
Right.
So it seems like everybody wants to say, well, not only the unions, but then what the state of Illinois government has done for the last 20 years, last 40 years. How much of where we are with pensions do you think is also kind of in part because of what happened during the mortgage bubble? I know I just watched The Big Short. I wanted to know that.
Well, and here's a key, Patty, and I don't know if you know this fact or not, and if you do, I apologize. Maybe your listeners don't know.
Yes.
But if you think about it, what do we hear that the governor wants so much? He wants this turnaround agenda, right?
Right.
Pass this turnaround agenda, and it will make everything better. That will fix all the financial woes of Illinois. We already passed the turnaround agenda. Do you know when we passed the turnaround agenda? In 1995, the Republican-controlled legislature gave complete authority to the mayor to run the Chicago Public Schools. That was the Chicago School Reform Bill, right, or Act, or whatever they call it. And it not only gave...
And that was Mayor Daley, obviously.
Yeah, not only gave Mayor Daley, or this now Mayor Emanuel has that authority, to just completely control the Chicago Public Schools without any input from the taxpayers. But it also restricted the collective bargaining rights and the power of the union to operate for the Chicago Teachers Union. Mm-hmm. This is exactly what Governor Rauner talks about. And when Mayor Daley asked for it, it was the same thing. It was like, I need this to fix all the problems of the Chicago Public Schools.
Right.
And so my question is, how's that worked out?
Right. Here we are, $480 million shortfall.
Yes. And here's the kicker, though. The kicker is that when you talk about the pensions being tied to the mortgage, there's no doubt that there was, but there was a setup for it, for the mortgage crash. When they took control of the schools in 1995, without getting into the weeds.
Oh, weeds. We love weeds.
Well, what they did was there used to be a line item on the tax bill that said, on your property tax bill, it said teacher's pension. So it was a line item on the bill. It was collected and it went directly into the teacher's pension.
So people could look at their bills and actually know how much.
They knew what was going into the pay, and it was a guaranteed payment.
Okay.
And when they took over control of the schools, they said, look, let's get rid of that line item and just roll it all into one operating and we'll decide how much to put in the pension.
Okay.
So from 1995 to 2005, right before the big mortgage crash, how many pension payments did the city of Chicago make into the teachers' pension fund?
I'm going to say none.
None. Zero.
For 10 years. Okay.
One decade of not making pension payments. Of course, the pension fund looked like it was doing okay because it was
growing.
This overinflated stock market.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're not putting the payments in, the base amount of money is not there. So when the crash came, it devastated the fund.
Right. So it was filling up and they were like, oh, we have time. Look at how much we have. We have this entire, you know, wealth of, to just sort of do it later.
Yeah.
And we can use it for other things.
The growth of the stock market will just keep us funded.
So at the time, so then Mayor Daley started using it for other things around the city.
Yes.
Which we can, I mean, there are things that we do appreciate now, but at the same time, at what cost?
Well, right. Right.
And now it's our students.
Yes. And you know, it's. I always tell people about this. The state and the city finances are not the federal government. We don't print money. We don't manipulate interest rates. It's not voodoo math. It's simple math. It's like your home checkbook.
Right.
And I don't know how you would think that you would not make a mortgage payment on your home for 10 years and think that you might actually be able to pay off the balance right. when it all came due.
Right, because I got money elsewhere. I got money somewhere else. I guess, yeah. Yeah, and I can take care of all the fees and fines. Joe, I told you we'd come to you. Hey, Pumpkin, how are you doing?
Not too bad, Carol. Hey, listen, a few points here. I think pensions are eventually going to go the way the dinosaur. Pensions, you know, once upon a time were pretty prevalent throughout the United States in the business world, in the private sector. It was probably about 55% of the people working for a living. It is now less than 5%, with the exclusion of the CPA schools, if you will, public institutions like that. What Rauner is trying to do, and I guess a classic case in point, and we're talking about being able to negotiate and barter and, you know, capitulate some points, is tenure. You know, where in the business world would you be able to survive just based on your longevity if you're not doing a good job? That's one of the major sticking points of the CPS. They want, and Rauner wants to promote on a performance basis. What's wrong with that?
Based on whose opinion of the performance?
Yeah, nevertheless, this is a sacrosanct point by Lewis and the CPS. If you're not willing to give on that, there's not much logic on their side, I feel.
Well,
for one point.
Yeah, and I respect that thought, Joe. What I would say is that where is their tenure anywhere outside of government? Well, how about every major privately run university, right?
Again, you're talking about an institution that is not the private sector. Okay.
Well, private universities are. I mean, it's education, but it's not the government sector. It's not the public sector. I'm talking about Boston College, Georgetown, Harvard, Stanford. These are all private universities. They have nothing to do with government. They all offer their teachers tenure. So it's not really a crazy concept. No, you're right. I would certainly agree with you that the concept of tenure in education does not equate to anything in the business industry. But then I would also say that the institution of education does not in any way, shape, or form parallel anything that goes on in the business world. Remember, the business world is designed to operate at a profit. Education is designed to operate at a loss. We're saying that it is worth our investment of our hard-earned tax dollars to make sure that our children and our future generations are educated. That's not a profit-based motive. So the, you know, sometimes I think, and I get it, and I will tell you this, the idea of bringing in efficiencies through business practices to government, I think it's a laudable goal, but sometimes I think we overreach on it. And in education, I definitely think that's an overreach. We should be focused on providing the best quality education. And sometimes when we have this profit motive, we wind up with these privately run charter schools that are siphoning off our tax dollars to investors instead of placing it back into the classroom. And, you know, if we're not educating our children properly, if we're not really doubling down and making sure we're not going to have qualified workers for the next generation, which means our whole economy is going to collapse. So
I think you made my point. Just you reinforced my point precisely.
So funny. I heard different things.
I want the best.
Hold on a second, Joe. This makes me laugh because this is one of those moments where I go, this is where the mechanism of the ear is exactly the same, and the way it's processed is totally different.
That's correct. That's right.
So let me hear, Joe. How did he reinforce your question or your
point? I want
point?
The best possible teachers imaginable in the schools teaching my kids.
Agreed.
And that is based on performance. I don't want a person that's doing a lackluster job being promoted due to tenure. I want a profit incentive just like private business. Mm-hmm. And that's what Ron is trying to do. I laud him for it.
Yeah,
city council that is totally democratic has been in place for 35 years, and they're immobile.
Well, and to be fair, Joe, I mean, it's not the city council. The city council has nothing to do with the current Board of Education. That's appointed strictly by the mayor. And if you're looking at Mayor Daley and certainly Mayor Emanuel, there's arguments can be made that some of their tendencies, especially as it relates to public education, is they have more Republican views than they do Democratic, at least in those policy. I mean, we can argue about other things. But, you know, the only thing that I would say about the whole tenure issue is that you talk about performance. And one of the things that I learned when I became a state representative, I said, oh my God, I hear about these, you know, the tragic stuff that's going on in Chicago public schools. Let me go see. And I went and toured my district, and I'm on the northwest side up there. And I found these teachers just doing a wonderful job. And I mean, really, really dedicated, hardworking as I'm touring these schools. They didn't know I was coming. And I said, gee, how are these people working so hard? I said, and these schools are doing so terribly. And so I started looking around. I go, oh, wait a minute. All the schools where I live are doing great. The kids are testing off the charts. They're doing a fantastic job. Now, here's the thing. These are the same teachers, by and large. I mean, if you're talking in a large group, we can say, you know, if you're comparing one to another is one thing. But when you're talking about a system of teachers, right, they all have the same, generally the same training, the same background. They're going through the same programs with the Chicago Public Schools. They're teaching in identical buildings with the same administration and the same curriculum. So why are the schools in my district knocking out of the park? And then when you go to the schools in Inglewood, they're failing. Well, it's not because the teachers are doing a lousy job. It's because there's a lot of other problems. So the question then becomes, is it fair to grade a teacher on getting these great test scores on the northwest side of the city of Chicago, where you've got parents that make sure the kid does homework, gets a hot meal, doesn't stay up all night watching TV or playing video games, gets a good night's sleep, gets a good breakfast before he goes to school, and then shows up at the parent-teacher conferences and addresses problems the child might be having at school? That's a very different situation.
And even the fundraising, the school, one of the schools my son's goes to is the resources they have for fundraising. They threatened to fire the Spanish teacher. The parents raised enough money, $150,000, to make sure that they could pay for the salary for that teacher for over 2 years. So, I mean, that's not going to happen in Inglewood.
Right.
They don't have the same level of whether it's income or resources, access to their friends at work and that kind of, you know.
Yeah.
It's just...
And the teachers are already going under incredible evaluation, a process right now that they will tell you is very cumbersome and inhibits their ability to actually spend more time in the classroom as they go through this really complicated evaluation. And you'd even get a kick out of it, Joe, because in order to let us legislators know how tough this was, they made us do the evaluation process before they would endorse us. And it's unbelievable. It's just pages and pages and hours of stuff where they're taking time out of classroom work work to do this or preparation. So, you know, it's a complicated issue. I appreciate your thoughts on the matter. I just don't think it's as easy as bring in business practices. I think we need to look a little deeper at some of the problems, especially the socioeconomic problems that really are the best indicator of whether or not children are going to succeed in education.
Hey, Joe, it's
again, Inglewood is a good Venus and Mars scenario.
Yes.
But that should be isolated. It should be dissected and addressed in that fashion. But again, it's not, it's a microcosm.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
take macrocosm and address the entire issue and on a more broad-based range and then concentrate on Inglewood separately.
Yeah, we have such high aspirations. Joe, I have to take a break here. And
gotcha.
And we have Wally on the line, too, so I got to make sure we get to all of our callers. But,
Joe,
good to hear from you, Pumpkin. Talk to you later.
Adios. Bye-bye.
Wally, you're after the break. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio with 19th District State Representative Robert Martwick. And we only have time for one more call, but I've asked our guest to hang out with us to talk to our guest for after the midnight hour, because we have an important story out of Flint, Michigan, actually out of the Chicago Fire Department. There's a firefighter who's loading up a semi with water for the residents of Flint. Usually your watch, you're like, after midnight? Yeah, you're going to be staying past midnight now. But Wally wanted to join the conversation. Hey, Wally, what's up?
Hi, Patty. Interesting discussion. I'm not sure how long your guest has been a state representative, but I think he probably made one of Joe's points, maybe unwittingly, when he said, you know, certainly business is designed to operate at a profit, but he did say that the schools are designed to operate at a loss. And I would say that I think, you know, you can't, the teachers, and I have utmost respect for teachers. It is a very difficult job. I myself couldn't do it. I can do a lot of things, but I don't think I could be a teacher. I think it's a special calling. But I can tell you, I think the corruption, I've got some experience with Chicago public schools. I think the level of corruption in the schools is absolutely killing the system. And it's causing, again, the state representative's comment that they should operate at a loss. I think they should be able to operate on a budget. And I would use my Exhibit A of corruption within the school district as Barbara Bird Bennett.
Yeah, that's a great, Wally, great, great
system, for goodness sake.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, the just let me explain my operating at a loss. What I mean is we put money into it. We don't expect a profit in return. I mean,
they should be able to operate at a budget.
Absolutely, they
the
should.
Whole thing, you know, your point on 1995 and the school, the control of the school being turned over to the mayor.
Yep.
I think right there was probably your whatever, I don't know how many school teachers there are, but it was almost the Full Employment Act for teachers, as well as the re-election bid for the current mayor, because the mayor could roll over on contracts and give those teachers and the unions whatever they wanted, basically.
Well, that hasn't been what's happened, Wally, if you follow the history of it. One of the biggest problems with the school board has been the lack of accountability to the voters.
There's your playoff music. More after this, Wally. Thank you so much for joining the conversation. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. I'm joined by State Representative of the 19th District, Robert Martwick. And we've been talking about what's going on in Illinois and the struggles we've had, but we know that there's a community in Michigan that is really going through a crisis, and firefighter Eric Washington is stepping up and asking for your help. Hey, Eric, how are you doing?
I'm good, and yourself?
I'm very well. Thank you for staying up late, because I heard you on Ro Khan's show. So you are committed to making sure as many people know about what you're trying to get done here for the people in Flint. What are you doing, and why?
Those people need it. You know, they've been subjected to that water that they've been drinking. It's full of lead and who knows what else. It's not even clear, like, regular water. It's yellow, it's brown, and, you know, these people have been given this water to drink, to wash clothes, to take baths, and it's not right, all because the governor wanted to save some money. It makes no sense.
It doesn't, and it's a tragic story, because I know a lot of people are sick, people have died, and it's funny, you make an interesting point. Somebody asked you why other people aren't doing more, or you're asking why people aren't doing more, but you are inviting people to help out, and how can they do that?
Right now, I'm hosting a water drive next Saturday on the 30th from 9 a.m. to noon at the High Park Academy High School.
Mm-hmm.
It's 6220 South Stony Island. And I just want people to come by, drop off a case to whatever they can spare of clean water. I'm taking bottled water, gallons of water, too. These people in Flint, you know, Flint is in bad shape, just like Detroit, just on a smaller scale. And like I said, they need help. My job as a firefighter, I help people when they're in need. That doesn't mean I can't help people when I'm not at work. So I felt like it was my duty to, you know, step up and try to get something done. I mean, I know that this isn't going to be the solution, but it'll help. So that's all I'm doing it for.
Eric, this is Rob Martwick. I'm a state representative here in Illinois, and I got to tell you, you're bringing tears to my eyes, buddy, that you would do this and step up for these people. And you're right. You know, it's a shame when these people, we expect certain things. We expect that when we turn on the faucet that clean water is going to come out of it and we can drink it and we can survive. And the fact that a government interfered with this and really harmed these people is tragic. But the fact that you would take time out of your life and out of your day and work so hard to solve this problem and help these people I tell you, you're an inspiration and you've made my day. I'll tell you that much.
Thank you.
And I know you've inspired a lot of people. You know, event or where you want people to drop off is on January 30th from 9 a.m. to noon at Hyde Park Career Academy. But you also have a GoFundMe account going as well. And how can people find that?
I started GoFundMe because a lot of people who responded to the water drive were out of town. They wanted to do something, but they weren't physically here in Chicago. So I set up a GoFundMe page on Wednesday morning. My initial goal for that page was $2,000. With the $2,000 that I would have raised, I could have gotten close to 7,500 bottles of water from Costco. On Thursday morning, I had bypassed my goal of $2,000. GoFundMe reached out to me and told me that it would be a good idea to raise the goal because they noticed sometimes when people see that the goal has been met, they stop giving.
Oh, interesting. Right. They're like, he's okay. They took care of that already.
Exactly.
Okay.
So I raised the goal from 2,000 to 5,000. And on Thursday, I bypassed that 5,000 goal again.
Congratulations.
That's awesome. That is
so
great.
It's, for me, it's just keep increasing because people are going to keep giving. And the more that we get, the more we can purchase. And give to these people. What I really would like is, you know, Costco sells their water on pallets in bulk. It's 78 cases of 24 in one pallet. What I want, I would love if Costco matched whatever I purchased from them. So I'm going to be reaching out to them in the morning.
Yes.
To see if we can, you know, get a deal for these people who need it. You know, water is a basic necessity. And we see this in third world countries. We don't see this in the United States of America. It's not supposed to happen here.
Go ahead.
Eric, where are you a firefighter?
I'm a firefighter, truck 38 in the Albany Park neighborhood.
So you're a Chicago firefighter. I have to tell you, you know, and even on the show today, we've heard people calling and they criticize government. And listen, it's a popular thing to do, but you are the epitome of a public servant. You're not making millions of dollars a year, and yet you're the guy looking to solve the problem. You're an inspiration. I think what you're doing is fantastic, and we will be doing what we can to help you with that. We'll make sure that we post this on all of our media, and we'll try and send you some water. We'll bring some water out to your event.
And I back you on that. And you have to raise this limit now on your GoFundMe page, too, because you are at $5,262. So let's get that. What's your plan on raising the limit? Can you do it again? Can you raise the limit?
Yeah, I can do it as much as, you know, I'm permitted to. So,
okay.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and raise it again. And just keep raising this, the word and spreading it to, you know, get as many people out on the 30th as possible with clean water for these residents. I've spoken to a couple people in Flint, and they're excited about, you know, what we're doing here in Chicago for them. You know, it's easy to say, you know, well, that's their problem. It's not just their problem because just like it happened in Flint, it can happen anywhere here. If it was that simple for a governor to make that decision, that can happen anywhere.
No kidding. And again, stepping up is not easy to do. I mean, so many of us can just passively go, oh, that's really a shame. We'll watch it on TV. We'll see it on our social media and we'll shake our heads and wag our fingers. But you have stepped up and I'm glad to hear that they are excited about it in Flint. I mean, this is, you know, and the problem is this is a long-term situation, a long-term crisis for the people who have, you know, unknowingly been drinking dirty water. But I do think that knowing that people care is going to have an effect too, Eric. And I applaud you. I think everybody listening, there's no way around this. This is a remarkable thing that you're doing, and we are so grateful. And I challenge Costco and other places. Look, if Costco does it, I think Walgreens should be like, hey, wait a minute, we got water. I think everybody right. should step up and do what they can, including us. So again, firefighter Eric Washington, where can people find you on the 30th?
30th, I'll be at High Park Career Academy, 6220 South Stony Island. That's in Chicago. From 9 a.m. to noon. I'm pretty sure it's going to go past noon, but 9 a.m. until noon as of now.
Okay, so on the 30th, let's all be there. If not, be at the GoFundMe page. He'll be raising limit, not the limit, what do you call it, your goal, I guess.
Because goal, yeah.
Our goal is to get as much water as possible. That's not actually, you can't type that onto GoFundMe. As much water as possible for Flint, Michigan is the goal. But thank you so much, firefighter Eric Washington. Yeah, and I'm going to send a friend request to you on Facebook.
No problem.
Don't ignore me. I'm just saying.
Okay.
All right, well, we'll talk to you again before the 30th and see how we're doing.
Problem.
And you know, we should send him a pizza or something. I feel like we should give you a pizza at least. We can't.
I'm good. Thank you.
It's the least we could do. All right, fine. We'll give it
some water. That's all.
Clean water, just water. All right, fine. Yep. Have a great night. Get some sleep. Will you? You've been talking all day. All right. Thanks.
Thank you.
Of course. More after this on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez, 720 WGN. Hey, Craig, how are you feeling after that Fight for Air climb training we did yesterday?
My legs are all sore and stuff.
I have to tell you, I kind of hurt myself. Well, because we thought we were going to do this little video. Like, I thought it was going to be a little, hey, let's all go on the stairwell.
Yeah, let's climb like a flight.
Yeah, you know, like
movie
for
magic.
The camera. And then she's like, and then the last camera's on the 33rd yeah. floor. And we were like, I'm sorry, what?
Well, and Jackie Paulus just started going.
Well, she disappeared.
I think she did them twice.
I think she did, too. It was really disgusting. But you can join us and WGN Radio in the fight for an end to lung disease, and that's going to be on March 6th. By the way, that's right after I come back from Marine boot camp. I'm going to be at Pendleton, and I'm going to Marine Corps boot camp for 5 days. And then on Saturday, I have a show in Kohler, Wisconsin, and then at night, and then I have to be up and do the Fight for Air. I'm sure I'll be totally fine. I absolutely think this is going to be a good
idea. The plan is perfect.
Yeah, I've worked this out very well. My schedule is spot on. But so come and see if I survive. If anything else, just see what kind of a horrible mess I am in the stairwells. this is presented by the United Health Presidential Towers in our West Loop right here in Chicago. Chicago has the biggest stair climb. It really does. There are four towers, 45 floors each. That's 2,340 steps. And you'll take it in the mission to help save lives by improving lung health. And I said this earlier, I think this is actually easier than the Sears Tower. The risers are shorter. You know, like when you yeah. step up, they're not as high. And the stairwell, the flights are shorter. And you break a little bit, right? You have 45 floors up. You get in an elevator, you ride down with some sweaty people, you walk a little, you go to another building, you do it again, and there's people cheering you the entire way. You can actually also, ask to have you can have a sign put up like in honor of someone, like I'm going to try to get my dad's name in the stairwell who passed away from small cell lung cancer in 2001. And this is something that's very important to so many people who, we think of lung cancer as a blamable disease. Like if you didn't smoke, you wouldn't end up like this. Well, there are people who never smoked in their entire lives and have lung cancer. And by the way, we love people who have addictions, and no one deserves to suffer like that. So we invite you to join us. You can register right now at the go to fightforairclimb.org or call 312-781-1100. And if you can't climb, you can still help with a pledge in support of our team. 89 cents of every dollar raised goes directly to education, research, and advocacy. So we look forward to seeing everybody. And I'm really excited about this.
I'd love to join you. How many weeks do I have to finish the stair climb?
How many weeks do you have to complete it? Started about 9:30 a.m. And I think the residents in the building would like you out by about noon.
Wait, you have to do all of them in one day?
In one day, yes. When we did the fight for the stair climb for the Brain Injury Institute, it was there were people that actually who could pledge and they could sort of track as we were climbing too, because we had little monitors on us. So it's very cool. So yeah, you want to come hang out with us?
Yeah, right. Maybe I'll do that. That sounds like fun. I will cheer you on. I don't think I'll be doing the stairs.
We'll give you some palms. Can we have some palms?
I can do that.
Can he bring a pizza?
Ooh, pizza would be appreciated.
I run with pizza.
He does.
I know it's bold, but that's how I do it.
We had donuts yesterday. Where were those donuts from? Because
I don't know. They were delicious.
They were magic.
Yeah.
They were so good.
I don't know. It wasn't that.
It wasn't fire cakes, was it?
No, I can figure it out.
We'll figure it out. The picture of the box is somewhere. Oh, firefighter Eric Washington is taking your donations at GoFundMe.com. And if you go to GoFundMe.com, there's a link right at the top in their search box. It says, send clean water to Flint.
That's great.
Firefighter Eric Washington's is the first campaign that pops up there. So he's doing a great job. People often feel like they can't do anything. And I've said this in particular last year when I was going down to Springfield, I was inviting people to join us down there to go to their representatives and their senator's office to call, to email, to contact your governor and say, I want more for our state. And I think people, it seems like we've just kind of sat back and went, well, this is a mess. That's what I did. I stopped going to Springfield, Representative Martwick, because I was like, I don't see any movement here. What can we do? Now you're going back next week. What's next?
Well, I mean, democracy is not a short game. Democracy is a long game. And things can always get better. You always have an opportunity to make the change. And it's not something that, unfortunately, and it makes sense. People have busy lives. I get it. We're all trying to get by. We don't have time to follow everything that goes on in politics. But it seems like we only get engaged when there's a problem, right? That's when, something happened. I better hurry up and find out.
Right.
Throw the bums out. And, the more that people can stay engaged on a regular basis, like, for instance, I send out a newsletter that a lot of people find very informative. I'm very frank. I'm honest about the things that are going on. Stay informed. Call your representatives or your aldermen when you see something that you think might be helpful or when you see something that might be hurtful, and let them, communicate your ideas. That's how democracy works, and it's a long game. And if we do that, we will get to the right answer eventually.
And we are working again on creating this a safe place. Not a safe place. That sounds like it's something scary to go down and meet your representatives. But a sort of a tutorial, let's put it that way, how to go talk to your representative. And it's really not even that hard.
No.
You stick out your hand and go, I live in your district. My name is Patty Vasquez. Pleasure to meet you, Representative Martwick. And this is what I'm concerned about.
Maybe someone will bring some Do-Right donuts. By the way, it was
Do Right Donuts.
Ooh,
maybe
those are good.
Mm-hmm. Emil wants to join the conversation. Hello, how are you doing?
I'm great. Yourself?
Very well. What do you want to say to the representative?
I have two main points. One is this budget issue is a shame that people come out and always blame the teachers for the different problems that are going on. When teachers are only one part of the system, they didn't create the system. They don't control it. They're just, the frontline people. But they're always the one to get the blame for whatever, issues that are problems that are going on.
You make a great point there, and most of these teachers work very, very hard. You hear so much misperception. I don't know when people decided that teachers were the cause of all of our problems, but every teacher I've run across in every public institution, and I really mean this across the board, are there bad ones? I suppose, but it is going to be a vast minority because most of these people are working very hard. And when I knock on doors in my district, I'm always amazed when I knock on a teacher's door, like on a Sunday, because they will always say the same thing. Look, I don't have time to talk to you. I have to go grade papers. I have to prepare for school. So they're working on their Saturdays and their Sundays and their late at night. And you're right. We shouldn't be blaming the teachers for the failures of government.
No. I'll give one example. I had a teacher when I was in grade school. At that particular moment in time, there were some things I could have been doing a little bit better. And this teacher took the time to call my house and talk to my dad at midnight. Now, some people may say whatever it is they want to, but I know that was a dedicated teacher that cared.
That's right.
And
you know, I tell people that all the time, Eric. I say, or Emil, I'm sorry. I say, think about your own life. Think about the teachers that you had in your life. And when I ask people, instead of objectifying teachers, think about the teachers that were in your life and tell me how many of them you thought were incompetent or horrible or lazy or didn't care. Most people will tell you, well, the teachers I had were all really good.
I wouldn't, but I have a really good memory. No, I'm looking at you, Mrs. Jordan, and Mr. Mulvey, and also that guy, Mr. Youngling. Also, go ahead. I'm sorry, Emil. I had a lot of teachers. I mean, like, that's, you know, 3 out of 100 or whatever, you know, between kindergarten.
Exactly. And there's always a few, but like you said, I mean, and mostly what we remember, the teachers that really made a difference in our lives.
Oh, Mr. Zielinski.
And Mrs. Krause.
Right.
We're emotionally scarred by some of our teachers. I'm sorry.
Right. The other thing I want to bring up that this budget issue is causing is that I'm a stay-at-home primary caregiver for a person that is paralyzed and other health issues. And there have been cutbacks to the services that this person receives. And it's happened in different ways. And, you know, I look at how it's affecting this person I'm taking care of personally, but I also see how it affects other people within the community also. And there's people who are, you know, really struggling to be able to live in their homes and to, you know, just live and make it day by day.
Another great point, Emil, you know, the cuts that we're making, you know, like I like to say, typically, they're in many ways heartless because they're aimed at our most vulnerable citizens. And number two, sometimes they wind up costing us more in the end than they wind up saving us today. And when you talk about cuts to people with disabilities and senior citizens, right now I'm actually helping someone with a great senator who has decided not to run for re-election, and I'm helping a young man that's running for that office by the name of Omar Aquino, great kid, and that's his story. He started out working in community care, and he saw how some of these budget cuts were just senseless and really harming him. And that really inspired him to run for office. And, you know, again, this is a good point. You say why we stay involved. And you know, Emil, you're seeing this stuff firsthand. And whether you like my friend Omar Aquino, whether you say that's going to inspire me to run for office, or you just get involved and you advocate on behalf of these issues, advocate against some of these really senseless budget cuts. That's what democracy is all about. And when we do that, when we get involved, our government will run better. Democracy with involvement is always better than democracy without.
Emil, thank you so much for calling in, and I hope things turn, you know, for the better. And I know this is a hard time, and we look forward to hearing from you again. Okay, let us know how you're doing.
Yes, I will. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a good night. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. I'm joined by Representative Robert Martwick of the 19th District. He is my representative, actually, and we've had the chance to talk quite a bit over the last year. We'd met before last April, but I went down to Springfield after the funding was slashed, as it were, for autism programs, epilepsy programs in Illinois, even smoking cessation programs, after-school programs, Meals on Wheels. And the funding was restored, but we knew at the time that it was a temporary fix, that finding $300 million in state revenue because of the state tax, you know, forms that were submitted. Again, Representative Martwick told me that, more funding has been cut recently to similar programs. And, you know, one of the reasons that I am so involved is, in fact, because I have a child who was born with a significant disability. He is missing part of his brain called the corpus callosum that affects him intellectually, physically. He struggles a lot being able to walk. He has never spoken a word in his life. He tries to communicate. He does it mostly through whether it's hand over hand, which means he'll take your hand and he will guide you towards something, or you have to take his hand and try to put him through the motions of doing something, whether it's trying to put a pen on paper to color. At 10 years old, it is hard to gauge what he knows as far as his education goes, whether he'll – sometimes he'll match shapes. Sometimes he's just not interested. He's 10 years old and he's bored with some of these things, so it may be that he knows even more than we are able to gauge. So I've told stories on this show before about how you know, they told me he might never walk. They told me he might never talk when he was born. They actually did not think he was going to survive. And he started walking when he was 3 years old, and he you know, was making a lot of progress physically. As far as whether or not he was able to communicate, it was still has been a mystery to us as to whether we could try to do sign language. He's never been interested in trying that. When he was 8 years old, it was the first time he learned how to point. We were lucky enough to have an applied behavioral analysis therapist who worked very hard to teach him how to point, which sounds so simple and basic until you realize how important it is in the development of language, because it becomes an entire conversation. When I point at his bed, I'm telling him it's bedtime, and he points at the door telling me, I don't wanna. And we now can have the, you know, he'll point at something like, I wanna go outside. And so there are basic things that he's able to tell us. He'll hand me a cup, so obviously he wants milk. When he was not long after he learned how to point, he actually did something that was remarkable that is one of my favorite things, one of my favorite moments of my entire life, because for years he wouldn't really let me kiss him. Like, I would try to, like, give him a kiss, and he'd pull away, and I would say, mommy kiss, and, you know, after some time, he would tilt his head toward me, or he'd give me a cheek, and he begrudgingly let me give him a kiss. But when he was 8, not long after he learned how to point, he pulled me down one day to my knees, and I was, you know, he does that sometimes, he pulls you down. He wants to cuddle or something. And he got in close to my face, and I wasn't quite sure what was happening, and he gave me my very first kiss. He gave me a Declan kiss on my lips. And here I thought I was going to have to steal kisses for the rest of his life, and it was one of the best days of my life. This morning, we were in our living room. Declan woke up at 3:30 in the morning. I had just gotten home a half an hour before. I try to get to sleep before he wakes up so I can at least get a little bit of rest, but he'd woken up, and so I took over because I try to let my husband sleep in so that he can take care of what needs to happen in the morning as the boys get ready for school. And Declan was, you know, he wanted to do different things. He wanted to eat. He wanted to drink. He wanted some milk. And I remembered that they had just given us this communication device at school. It's actually an iPad on a with a really heavy duty case to it with a strap so that Declan can wear it around his neck. And I'm supposed to be learning how to use it with him together. And so I went and grabbed it. So I was like, what do you want? And he pushed. And we knew that he could do eat and drink. And he does that already kind of through different gestures. So I, you know, I'd show him the board and he would point at drink and he'd point, I'd give him a cup and he'd point at eat and I gave him a waffle. And that was kind of, and then I think I was being kind of aggressive because I was like, show me what else, you know, what do you want to do? What do you want, Declan? And finally he turned around and he pointed at the word play, which I was so caught off guard because, we've never actually had that conversation. I just want to, basically he was saying, I just want to play, stop bothering me. I've never had that conversation with Declan. And there's a bunch of different words on that. You know, there's a lot of, it's not like he randomly died. I was like, you want to play? He's never said that to me. I mean, you know, he does play, but he's never been able to express that. And I was like, oh, we're going to play. So we have, you know, he's got some sound machines. He's got different things. He went and then he wanted to go play by himself. And he went and played in the room in his bedroom. And it was such a great morning. And I'm just so excited because it's the promise of more with him. And when our listener, Emil, called earlier and was talking about how hard it is now for people who have disabilities or are senior citizens to stay in their homes, this at the age of 10 years old, for my son to be able to say, I want to play. I can't express to you how important that is moving forward in the goal, you know, our goal, our hopes that he will be able to live independently someday. He might not, but this is something I never thought I would ever see. I just thought, you know, we kind of go through gestures because you have these moments where you're like, okay, this is what life is. I'm going to beg for kisses and I'm just going to try to guess what my son wants, or my son's not going to walk even. So my son continues to surprise me, to make my world a much bigger place, but it's why I fight, not just for my family, but for families all over the state of Illinois. And it's why Representative Martwick and people on both sides of the aisle, I can't imagine there's anybody in the General Assembly who doesn't want a child like Declan, or someone that Emil cares for, or someone in your family. They don't want to hurt you. They think they're doing the best thing. But sometimes looking at a spreadsheet doesn't translate into what it's like to live with somebody who you only want the best for.
Well, and that's a great point. I mean, this is really comes down to, when you're talking about this, is, you know, a philosophy of what is the role of government, right?
Right.
And to me, government is designed specifically for that. There is no profit in trying to make your son's life better.
Right.
Right. And so this is where government comes in, where we as a society say, you know what, we're human beings. We care about all, especially those that are most vulnerable. And we are all going to collectively get together and work to make that person's life better. And, you know, I one of the things that I've grown fond of in the legislature is, you mentioned there isn't anyone who doesn't want to see your son's life get better. And that's true. Everyone wants to, but wanting isn't enough, right?
Right.
And so when I talk to my colleagues who are on the other side of the aisle, and of course for your listeners, I'm a Democrat, and that's fine. I, you know, whatever goes with that, that's what I am. I'm a liberal. But when we have these conversations about how we're going to fix our budgetary crisis, my colleagues on the Republican aisle, they want all of the same things that I want. The difference is that they're not willing to pay for it.
Right.
And at some point we have to decide, wanting is not right. Should we or shouldn't we? Will we or won't we? Are we going to, or are we not going to fund these programs?
Right.
And that's a value judgment. We have to decide what is the role of government. To me, as a human being, I look and I say, it's our responsibility to try and make your son's life better through whatever we can do on our end, right? And you know, that's where we're at. We have to have that debate. It's important to have that debate honestly and openly, because we'll never get to the bottom of this budget if we don't.
And it is, you know, when you mentioned the most vulnerable, you also mentioned earlier the MAP grants and 1,200 students that will not be returning to programs. I mean, these are all things where when we fall short, you know, in bits and pieces, we fall short for their future, for everyone's, for the future of Illinois.
Yeah.
Because when you have students who can't return to school, who were on the path to having a better life, whether they're from, you know, a town in Illinois that's struggling, or the south side of Chicago, this is our future too. This is some, and if you're talking about spreadsheets, that does become more expensive, whether it's, yeah, you know, Declan having to depend on long-term care, or an individual who's, you know, isn't going to, you know, paying more in taxes because they're earning more.
Right. And again, you know, we get into the different philosophies, right? Like there might be, and someone might have a philosophy, hey, not everyone's supposed to go to college. And listen, if you can't afford it, tough luck.
Right.
And to me, I say, if we're not the land of opportunity, if every kid in this country does not have the same opportunity to be the next big success because they're denied access to education, then we're failing.
Yeah.
We're not America anymore, right? So when we deny 1,200 kids from city colleges that are trying to advance their lives, they're trying to make their lot in life better, they're trying to do what so many people say, hey, take advantage of your opportunities, and we pull the rug out from under them, unconscionable.
Yeah, it is. And there are people who will contact the show. They will contact the station and say, I'm tired of being browbeaten about special needs kids. Why do I got to pay for autism? And again, I'll always go back to this, because Craig just clicked on his microphone and said, well, then why pay for anything?
That's right.
Why pay for anything? Why pay for, and we can even go back to when a listener called and said that, I think it was Wally that said you proved his point in your conversation about how schools aren't supposed to operate at a profit. By design, it's going to be a loss. You can't make money off of a kid graduating or having, right, a better education.
Government is designed to do all the things that business doesn't want to do, right? I mean, there's no profit in many of the things that we do as a government. And that's exactly why we do them. We come together as a civilized society and say, say educating our children is important.
Right.
Without a profit motive, we say that taking care of senior citizens, ensuring that they can stay in their homes and have a dignified life. I mean, we, you know, when people look at what our society is like today, what I often say is just think about what it was like at the turn of the century, where senior citizens were on the street dying of starvation.
Right.
Right. At some point between then and here, we decided that is not acceptable for a civilized society. For our country, we're going to take care of our senior citizens. So we enacted Social Security. We enacted Medicare. And we have programs like Meals on Wheels, which allow senior citizens to live in their homes in dignity at a much lower cost than being forced into nursing homes. And yet now we're starting to cut those programs.
Yeah, that's the thing. Okay, we have to take a break here because we keep going. Let's talk about that next, about something Emil also talked about, which was being able to stay at home with in-home care as opposed to being institutionalized. More with State Representative Robert Martwick of the 19th District. It's Jefferson Park, that area, Harwood Heights, a little Gladstone
nice.
Park. It is. It's kind of nice.
It's a great area.
Over by there. Listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. I'm joined by State Representative Robert Martwick. And I was just given a button for Kim Fox, for state's attorney. You are supporting her in the race against Anita Alvarez and others in the race.
Yes.
What is your, because you were a prosecutor in Cook County.
I was. I spent 5 years under the Devine administration. Right.
And have you worked with Kim Fox before, or how have you come to know her?
No. I came to know of her through her work in the community, and then I got to know her when she became chief of staff to Tony Preckwinkle.
Okay. So this is an important race in Chicago, obviously much more high profile than it ever would have been were it not for the Laquan McDonald shooting.
Right.
As a prosecutor, can you tell us a little bit about that? I mean, like, about why it would take over 400 days to even release that video, or not release the video, to bring charges. The video is a different situation altogether.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, I mean this in all honesty, certainly you know that I'm supporting Kim Fox, but to be fair, I never was that high level in the office after 5 years that I would know why it would take 400 days to charge. But that is odd. You know, there are just too many unanswered questions about this case. And I think that they have raised the questions of how that office is operating.
Yes.
And I think State's Attorney Alvarez has had 8 years, and I think she's done some very good things in office. But I think given the tenor of what's going on with these police-involved shootings, lack of prosecutions, lack of public confidence. Sometimes when you're a public official, and this is key, sometimes when you're a public official, when the public loses confidence, it doesn't matter if it's your fault.
Right.
Sometimes the public needs a change, and it doesn't matter whether you did something right or wrong. And I think at this point, I think the public has seen what's going on. They've lost confidence in the office, and they need someone else to reassure their confidence. And I think Kim Fox is really a good candidate. I think she's a dynamic individual. I think she's exceptionally intelligent. She's incredibly well experienced to do this job. She served as a supervisor in one of the toughest areas there in the juvenile delinquency, you know, which is where you're trying kids
right.
for horrible, horrible crimes, but you're trying them in a court of delinquency instead of adult prosecution. Very, very sensitive stuff. And so I really think that it's she's going to be a great asset to this county.
Do you have any thoughts on our next superintendent of police? I know that this isn't something we plan to talk about, but what are your thoughts, maybe more specific, about hiring from outside of the Chicago Police Department? You know, bringing somebody, as we have for the last superintendents, the last two have been from somewhere else.
Well, as long as I'm on wild speculation, because really, when it comes to hiring police superintendents, I really cannot offer a whole lot in the way of expertise. But, you know, I think what you're looking at is start with what is the real problem here. And the real problem is a complete loss of confidence in the city to provide a system of policing that, that, you know, there is this real sense of injustice right now.
There is.
And it's terrible because the reality of it is the vast majority of police officers, and even the protesters when pushed this will tell you that the vast majority of police officers are hardworking, doing a great job. It's the few bad apples. The problem is the bad apples are really, really bad.
Right.
And we have questions about...
It makes a whole barrel smell.
Yes. And really the...
I don't know if you put apples in a barrel, but that's what's happening.
Yeah, no, exactly. Bushel, right?
Bushel, whatever. Oh, that's what it is. Yeah. It's a bushel, thank you.
And I don't know how bad a bushel can smell, but I'm sure there's a nursery rhyme for that.
Oh, it smells terrible.
No, you know, we need to, in a democracy, the public needs that has to have their needs addressed. And right now, that is a need to that there is confidence that the police are going to protect them. And that there is going to be justice when there are errors made. And right now, there is no confidence that it's going to happen.
No, I mean, when people call the police department, we had a friend of ours in the studio, she's black, and she said, you know, when I call the police, I want them to come help me, not hurt me. And that there was a shooting where one of the residents in the home was shot and killed because they were, you know, it's that's scary for people who want to be, you know, they consider the police department to be their line of defense when they're in danger.
I want to tell you a little quick story about this. When the Laquan McDonald thing came out, and of course, as an elected official, you think, what is my role in this?
Right.
And my thought was, look, I'm a privileged white guy from a good neighborhood who has a great education, and the world has been my oyster. And my only interactions with police is usually when they say license and registration, please, or they say, how can I help you, sir?
Right.
Right. And so I called one of my friends who's an African-American legislator, and I asked him, I said, do you think I should weigh in on this? Because I really feel like this is not an issue that I have any personal experience with. And he's a very, very dear friend of mine in the legislature. And he said to me, he said, Rob, he said, I'm 30-year-old black man. He said, I can't even count the number of times I've had a police officer draw his weapon and point at me. And he said, I'm one of the good guys.
Right.
And so it really made me sensitive to the fact that I'm not living this experience, but it's so important for all of us to understand that just because we don't have bad experiences doesn't mean there aren't issues in what's going on. And we need to find a way to make sure that everyone feels that they're getting justice out of their police department.
I agree. And that's, you know, and it's one of those things where we have so many things to talk about. I don't know if you want to stay. I'll take a quick break here and we'll figure out how long you're hanging out for. Because, you know, we're having we can talk about other things. I have this Amy Schumer thing I need to get off my chest.
Yeah.
More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me is State Representative Robert Martwick of the 19th District. And I told him he could hang out and talk about other stuff. He doesn't talk about politics and things. Although show business has a lot of politics. We're going to talk a little bit about that. But before we do, Esmeralda Leon, Representative Martwick's, what'd you call him, press secretary? Dan, what's your...
Chief of Staff.
Chief of Staff. Dan asked me a question about the place you used to work. Yes, Dan, go ahead. Oh, wait, you have to put headphones on in order to be able to hear Esmeralda very well. There you go.
Hey, Esmeralda, how are you?
Hi.
This is Dan Pogorzelski.
Oh, hi. Yay. People I know.
It's been a while, right?
I know, since like summer.
That's pretty good. Since summertime?
The last time we spoke, it was the closing of that German bar. Oh, you can't hear me?
Here, I can't. See if it's plugged into something and then turn the knob up. Are your headphones plugged in somewhere? Just check the end of your cord. The end of your headphones cord. I know. I'm like, it's so hard to explain to people. But is it plugged in?
Please stand by for technical difficulties.
Number one, is it plugged in?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Can you turn it off and turn it back on?
I can hear you
now.
Yay.
Yay. Yay.
Wow. The last time we spoke was summer.
That's right. Mirabel.
Yes, at the closing of Mirabel.
How many places have you closed down, Esmeralda?
I didn't close it. I was just there because it was closing.
First it was Hungry Brain, then it's Mirabel.
Which now back open.
What is Hungry Brain is?
Yes.
Yes.
Why didn't you?
Well, because it's different people.
Oh.
It's different people.
Do we not like them?
No, we do. They're former customers. Mm-hmm. But it's a whole different vibe. It's a whole different situation now.
Oh.
But it's open now.
All right.
It's still called Hungry Brain.
When we do
I don't work there, so.
What was that, Dan?
When we do our next Well Slept Film Fest, we'd love to have you back.
Oh, yeah. Well, we'll see, because I work overnights now.
Yeah, she's here from now till forever.
I'm in this building. I just live here now. You
she
didn't
does,
know that?
Yeah.
I live at the Tribune Tower.
We give her a blanket and a pillow. She chooses different offices to camp out in. Who has the cleanest office to sleep in? The most comfortable floor?
I just sleep in the conference room.
Oh, that's a good idea.
I sleep on the table.
Yeah, and then they come. The sales team comes in. You're like, did you bring donuts? Anybody bring any donuts?
Exactly.
Esmeralda, we were talking last night about Amy Schumer, and did I ask you what you thought about Amy Schumer? Did I get a chance?
Yes, and I mean I love her,
right.
But I don't mind her. I haven't really seen any of her stand up or her show. I just seen the movie.
You saw Trainwreck.
Yes,
right. I have not seen the movie, and I think Amy Schumer is one of those people that some people really love, and they're like, oh, I'd love to go drinking with her. I'd love to hang out with her. I noticed even before this story came out over the weekend, there seemed to be a growing backlash. There was a kid on the red carpet who took a picture with her. He's actually, or with at the Golden Globes. So there was a picture a kid took. He and his dad took a picture with her. And then later he tweeted out, I spent the night with Amy Schumer. She tweeted back, oh, I get it, because I'm a whore. Say hi to your dad, because he'd been on the red carpet too. And there was a split between how people felt about that exchange. You know, he apologized right away. He was like, oh, I really was joking. I thought you would think that was funny because of the kind of humor that you do, right? She does a lot of sex humor.
Right.
So, I mean, that's hard. With a comic, you know, we tend to have oddly thin skin, right? We used to have a producer on this show who would try to like rile me and make fun of me. And I was like, I'm in the middle of another conversation. And his thing was like, well, you're a comic. You like the joke. And I'm like, not right now. And so Amy kind of bristled at that and responded. And it's public. When you put something on social media, everyone now gets to weigh in.
But can I,
yes,
real quick, can I, the rest of that tweet, though, was,
yes,
certainly not the first guy to write that.
Right.
Which kind of, I'm also like,
yeah,
all right, guy.
Yeah, she, right.
I was kind of, I was like, I don't know about that.
It was weird.
Oh, no. Yeah. The tweet itself, Esmeralda, is totally sexist. Like, I think there's no argument to that. But I think to Patty's point, a lot of Amy Schumer's humor is similar to that being comedic. That tweet is funny the same way that Amy Schumer is funny sometimes.
Right.
You know,
sure.
It's not funny out of context, but putting it in who he's tweeting at, that he met that person,
yeah,
and that's what she jokes about all the time.
Sure, but it's kind of that situation of I can make fun of my family, but you can't make fun of my family.
And the other thing is, like, why respond, right? Like, this is the one, this is the wall you've chosen to stand on to, like, yell at somebody, right?
By the way, Trainwreck, not really that good of a movie.
See, and this is something that
it's really just at the end funny, but
I was laughing to myself. This happened last year when we, and a totally different thing, and that was a much bigger situation with Bill Cosby. When the weekend we started talking about it, I for the first time publicly said I had stopped being a fan of Bill Cosby's when I started doing stand-up comedy. I had grown up loving Bill Cosby. Now, this is a good example of what we're talking about, when people you admire disappoint you. Mm-hmm. Did you grow up liking Bill Cosby?
Loved him.
And that was hard last year.
Yeah, it's just devastating.
Yeah, and I went on the air and I was early to talk about it. Hannibal Buress had done weeks before this set about how Bill Cosby is a rapist, and I want you all to know that, and I want you to think about that when you watch The Cosby Show. And that became a little bit of an internet thing. Somebody had videotaped it with their phone and posted it. Well, weeks later, he was being interviewed on NPR. Bill Cosby was being interviewed, and it was actually for a donation. He was lending his art collection to the Philadelphia Museum, and the interviewer asked him about these allegations. And that's when Cosby got kind of funky about it, and we were on two nights later, and I decided to talk about it. And the backlash I started getting about how I had no right talking about that, it was only speculation, and people were getting mad. So I have been hesitant to say anything about Amy Schumer in general. I will say this. This is the one area I actually have a really, I have skin in the game, because I have friends who have come forward and said that Amy Schumer has stolen from them. I have been a comedian for 20 years. I've been accused of stealing. I guess this is the one thing I could say I'm actually an expert on. I have sold a sitcom to ABC. I know what it takes to get your material out there, what it means to own your brand. So I will say I understand the situation very well. But I've never been public about my opinion about Amy Schumer, because she has achieved what so many of my fellow comedians aspire to, which is being considered, she's at the top of her game. When people look for someone who's funny, they go to Amy Schumer. Look, 2 years ago, I was told I would not be on late night television because they were looking for Amy Schumer before she was Amy Schumer. And I don't do that kind of humor. It's not my style. Look, I've been to auditions where they're looking for Tina Fey types. And I hope that they never, I really never want there to be a moment where someone says, we want a Patty Vasquez type. Because I would think that comedians, by their, our very nature, we are unique. It's why we do what we do, because we have our point of view. So I was not a big fan of Amy Schumer's style because it just never felt authentic to me. But I could understand. I've laughed at things that she has said. I admire the success that she has achieved. But over the weekend, a comedian that I not only respect and admire and have had looked up to before I ever stepped on stage was Wendy Liebman. Wendy Liebman to me was one of, is one of the great comedians. And I don't say woman or female comedian in front of that. She is one of the greatest comedians ever. Phyllis Diller said the same about her. And she may not be famous. Many comedians who are incredibly talented will never be famous. There's actually a documentary coming out about headliners on the road who are incredibly talented, who you will never hear of. So when Wendy Liebman posted over the weekend, she posted, first Amy Schumer steals my joke for her HBO special, and now this meme of my joke that I never got credit for. I'm done with social media. So she tweets that out over the weekend. Somebody else tweets at her. It's a director from Arrested Development, actually. And he said, you and Kathleen Madigan should talk. So Kathleen Madigan joins the conversation in Twitter sphere, in social media, and says, yeah, I've been, can you play the, she has a set that she did for her Showtime special that later became a very similar sketch on Amy Schumer's show. Do we have that?
Okay, so I get why poor people are fat, but Oprah, you're a billionaire. You have enough money to pay a man to stand there and literally slap shit out of your hand before you put it in your mouth.
Amy, you look amazing. What are you doing? Weight Watchers, Jenny Craig.
Yeah, right. Those take too much self-control. Last time I checked, I wasn't a robot. Boop, boop, boop. Nope.
How'd you do it?
With Slap Chef.
With Slap Chef.
With Slap Chef.
Slap Chef? What's that?
It's a new weight loss program that takes decision-making out of the equation.
How does it work?
First, one of Slap Chef's world-class chefs makes you one of their signature dishes. Then, before you can say Slap Chef, they knock it out of your stupid mouth. Slap Chef.
Yeah. So, taking a premise that is in someone's comedy, that is flat out thievery. So there, now there's an argument that erupts on social media. And when I say that I believe Kathleen Madigan, I would stand behind this woman any day of the week and anything that she says. She has nothing to lose in this. She is not somebody who's trying to get famous. She's an incredibly successful comedian. I've worked with her. She does not pull any punches. She will tell you what she thinks. We were in a limo one day, and because she has one, she gets to ride around like that. And she was asking me, she's like, where's the next, this is before Amy Schumer got famous. It was Wanda Sykes had kind of, was taking some time away from doing as much. And she wanted to know where the next Wanda Sykes, she demands a lot of fellow comedians. And I think that she had not said anything about this because she just figured, you know what, who am I? I'm just Kathleen Madigan. I'm doing my thing. I'm successful. I'm fine. When Kathleen Madigan stepped into this argument, I was like, oh, well, this just got real, because she would not carelessly, nor would she fraudulently step into this conversation. Oh, my God, we're supposed to talk to our guest, Brian. Oh, you know what? So let's table. This is so funny. Can we talk? Can you ask Brian if we can call him back in just a little bit? Because I don't know that I can.
You can transition that quickly?
Well, I have a representative on the show, and I don't know if I want to
talk
combine
about the
these
thing?
Two things.
Okay.
Yeah, could you ask him
yeah.
that? All right,
yeah.
Thank you very much. So let me reorganize my thoughts real quick, and I'll explain to the representative off the air why he might not want to hang out and give him that option. But we are talking about the allegations that Amy Schumer stole material, and more of, well, we'll see what we're talking about when we come back after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio, and I'm hanging out with State Representative Robert Martwick from the 19th District. I think I've explained that pretty well, the Twitter war that erupted between Amy Schumer and three comedians who alleged that she stole their material.
You know, very well, and I mean, that business, you know, your intellectual property. It's all you have.
It's all we have. Yeah. It's all we have. And Wendy Liebman, who was the one to drop the match on this this tinderbox, she pulled down the tweet. Right. And I know Wendy. She is the kind of woman who's like, this is not the battle that I intended to start. I think she was frustrated. She's incredibly successful. She's really talented. So she later tweeted out, "I never said Amy Schumer stole my joke. I just said it was the same. It's possible we both wrote it. I just wanted you to know I wrote it first." And not only first, but like in the 90s.
Right.
It is exactly the same joke, with the exception of first date instead of it's. The joke is, do we have it? That wasn't the one I asked you to pull. But it is. But the other thing was Patrice O'Neill's material, which actually came up last fall, that Amy closed with material that a comedian that we lost several years ago, Patrice O'Neill, died in 2011. That one also is almost word for word. She changes the name of a sex act, I guess, is the best way to put it. But I had not watched it until today. And because I had heard other comics say, well, it's parallel thinking. That one, Craig, would you say that one's parallel thinking, the Poltergeist and the Houdini? I would say that's pretty much word for word, mm-hmm. That one. Yeah.
It's really difficult to argue parallel thinking unless just the basic concept's the same. When the words start to be the same, when the setup, the punch starts to all be the same, that seems like you stole it.
Right. Yeah. So there are a couple different scenarios for this. One is that she's heard the material, you know, and then doesn't really think about it, and then writes the joke, not realizing it's part of her consciousness, right? That it was from somewhere else. Because, Craig, we heard her in this interview yesterday say someone told her before she recorded her HBO special, they told her that Wendy Liebman joke sounded familiar, and they swore they'd heard it somewhere. They couldn't remember where, and they told her it sounded kind of hack. So if somebody from the outside tells you, and a fellow comedian or someone who's in the business says, you know, that sounds a little hack, you might want to take a step back and go, is this something, is this what I want to put out there? Is this the brand that is this joke worth risking that? Right. Mm-hmm. Of not being original, not being, because Amy Schumer has material that is incredibly specific to her, that is unique. And it's a shame. So I don't know. I'm not going to say I don't know Amy Schumer personally. And I don't know that she did this deliberately. And I don't know for her sketch show whether or not one of her writers also saw Kathleen Madigan set, because on that show she has a team of writers. Whether or not she has a team of writers on her HBO special or for her act when she tours, I also don't know that. But when you are accused of, and when someone just brings it to your attention, hey, you might want to rethink that, that's a red flag that you need to make sure that your material is as specific to you as possible. My material is about my family. There are things that I do that are general, I do material that is about women's health. There's a segment that I do that is about women not wanting to go to the gynecologist. Mm-hmm. And I've been doing it long enough that if that ever showed up anywhere, there are thousands of people who would go, not only have I seen that, Patty does it all the time, because my goal for that is to sort of take away the fear and stigma of women's health. And that's why I do it a lot. There's other material I do a lot because I constantly need to try to keep getting work. I'm not at the level of Wendy Liebman or of Kathleen Madigan or of Amy Schumer. I will say this. I've been accused of stealing material. My first year of comedy, I was accused by two other women. This is so weird that it's women who, you know, I don't know the dynamic. It was very intense for me. It was very scary. When you are accused of stealing material, it can destroy your career. For Amy Schumer, I don't think it will. But for me, when that rumor spreads, you stop getting work. I just kept showing up for the work. I made sure that I started doing material that nobody else could do. I'm Irish and Mexican. I talk about my growing up in Chicago and my neighborhood. Whatever it was, I try to make sure that some of my material was as much Patty Vasquez as possible. You have to keep showing up. Dane Cook. Craig and I have talked about Dane Cook being accused of this. Louis C.K., not only did he accuse him, but you could put up side-by-side video of Dane Cook and Louis C.K.
I was in college when Dane Cook's big CD came out, and it, like, swept our campus. And he was just blowing up with how funny he was for that demographic. Everybody thought this was genius. And then Louis C.K. does this podcast interview, a guy I'd never heard of because he wasn't really at the same level he is now. And you start lining these jokes up, and this is the first time I remember someone really doing this on social media or the internet, whatever. And it all seemed terribly ripped off, and then Dane Cook was no more.
Right.
And he just sort of vanished.
Well, and the other thing that Louis started doing too was, again, doing material that nobody else could do, talking about his daughters, talking about his life, talking about specific moments that you know that's Louis. You hear his material and you know that it's Louis C.K. And I think that's where his success has also come. You know, Kathleen Madigan, Tammy Pascatelli, Wendy Liebman, the bits that Amy took are observational. And those are, you know, those are things that, like, you know, at some point you have to go, all right, again, I have to turn this in and go, what can I focus on? And I'm so sorry to see this happen to Amy Schumer. I'm sorry for whatever reason it happened, but it's there. And I don't think it's going to destroy her career. It is disappointing as a female comedian, especially to see someone that, you know, again, is doing something that I aspire to having that level, that reach is my goal, as it is Tammy Pascatelli's, who has since, by the way, apologized for some of the language that she used. But she's in this argument. I know all three of these women that are accusing Amy, and I believe them. I don't know that Amy did this maliciously or even consciously. It could be extreme laziness on her part, but it is incredibly disappointing. So
it's fascinating. You know, it's a world that I'm not a part of, but you know, you think about what comedians do, and of course, as politicians, we want to engage people. And of course, what do? You tell a joke here, tell a joke there, right? And what do we do in our society? What do? We repeat jokes. Yeah. You hear a funny joke, you want to repeat the joke, right? It's got to be such a challenge for a comedian to try and keep those jokes fresh and have to write them originally. I can imagine, as you said, sometimes you might just get a little overwhelmed and a little lazy.
Yeah.
And you say, hey, I know this one won't work.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Representative Robert Martwick, we appreciate your time tonight. It's getting a little late.
Well, it's great to come down. Thank you so much for having me. I've had a good time.
And I hope to see you. I'm hoping to go down to Springfield for the State of the State next week.
State of the State. It'll be interesting.
Well, do me a favor, and I've asked as of our other guests that work in Springfield, fix the state, will you? Sorry,
I'm working on it.
I know. We all are. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. Before we move away from the Amy Schumer conversation, I know we had a texter that asked if I heard Bill and Wendy talk about this. I will say this about that, and whether or not I'm judge and jury, I don't have to be, because you can actually put the two clips of Amy and Patrice up, and the bit is word for word. So there's that. Secondly, I continue to do stand-up comedy in the clubs. I've worked with Kathleen Madigan and with Wendy Liebman. I know them personally and can vouch for them as character references. So I wouldn't say judge and jury. I would say character references. And as far as my experiences as a comic and what this looks like, what it feels like, I can share that with you. And if I was accused of something, I would need to figure out a way to handle it. And I think Amy's doing her best with that. This is not an easy thing to do. She's incredibly talented. And I do hope that they all see their way through this. It sounds like Amy, Wendy, and at least Amy and Wendy have figured out a way to come to terms with their political very public argument. But we'll see what happens with Kathleen and Tammy. And there's nothing to be said for Patrice O'Neill, because we've lost him. In 2011, he died, and she did material that was his. We have on the line with us Brian, producer Brian from the Rokan Show, who is in Vegas, and we hear some music in the background. Hey, Brian. You're at the, I'm sorry, am I reading this correctly? You are at the Porn Awards?
Yes, I'm at the Avian Awards Expo 2016, which the actual award show, that goes on Saturday, but for like 3-4 days, there's like an adult, it's basically like Comic-Con for adult films and porn and all that good stuff.
Okay. What have you seen so far? Because I see that a lot of comedians are actually going to be there, like Dave Attell and Lisa Lampanelli and Jim Norton.
Yeah, I haven't ran into them yet, but Andrew Dice Clay actually showed up. And he was hilarious. And he's actually a pretty cool dude. So Andrew Dice Clay I ran into. Ron Jeremy.
Oh.
I actually got a chance to party with him last night.
Yes.
And the dude, he's really funny, and he's totally different from what people would expect him to be. He's actually pretty quiet, but once you get him talking, you can't get him to shut up. it's crazy. But, you know, the craziest thing about, you know, the ABN is the type of people that come to the ABN. It's not like you think porn, you think like sleaze balls and all this other stuff, but you don't see that here. It's like what I've seen so far. I've seen a lot of, like, conservative people. I've seen couples coming to this place, and everybody's just having fun. And it, like I said, it's like a Comic-Con for porn. It's crazy.
You know, you keep calling it the Comic-Con for porn. Are there a lot of cool costumes?
There was one lady as Harley Quinn, and in a nice, tasteful way. But it was really great. Another interesting thing that I saw here was that they actually had a panel for entertainment, legal stuff. It was like people that want to get into the industry but don't know how to do it. So they're like lawyers for the porn industry. It's crazy. And I had a nice little long talk with them, and it was pretty cool. And it's a lot of things that we don't know, like normal folks like you and I, we don't know about, you know, this whole porn industry. It's crazy.
I have this question for you, Brian. is there anyone that you've recognized?
I've seen Sarah J. She's like one of my favorite ones. So I actually met her, and when I shook her hand, she was sweating like a hog, and I felt so bad.
Oh no!
I was so nervous.
Oh.
But she, you know, she calmed me down and was like, "Hey, you know, it's just me. I'm a normal person." And she actually had a conversation with me for about 5 minutes, and it was cool.
Do they?
A lot of it.
You know what I would love to see, and I don't. This must be somewhere, because I know Esmeralda sent me a link to what it's really like to be on the set of a porn shoot, as far as from the actor's point of view. But you know what? I've never seen our porn bloopers. Do they have that? Like, do they have that playing anywhere at this awards event?
No, they don't. But they have a lot of live shows. They have like a foot fetish thing going on that I could not take my eyes off of. I was disgusted, but I couldn't take my eyes off of it at the same time. And it was like, it went on for like 10 minutes, like this whole foot fetish show.
Okay, so now who votes on these awards? Do you know who contributes to voting?
Well, you go to avnawards.com and you actually vote. So a lot of these porn stars, quote unquote, they get on Twitter, they get on their social media, and they totally just push for you to vote for them for the best, you know, categories. The list of categories is like super long.
Yeah, here we have best video, best new starlet, most outrageous sex scene, best group sex scene, and best selling DVD of the year. So obviously the last one's easy because it's how many sales you've had.
Right, yes. Right. And the funniest one to me is the BBW performer of the year.
But BBW is that? What's BBW?
Big Beautiful Women.
Okay.
So if people that are into like big girls, you can vote for your favorite big girls.
All right.
So it's crazy. But actually, on like the only downside of being here is seeing, you know, some of the ladies, you know, and like the first day I was here, there was one porn star. I won't give her name out. Like, she came up behind me because I didn't know she was in the porn. She rode the plane with me, and I'm walking around the expo. I'm doing an interview, and the girl walked up behind me, and she was, like, super drunk, and she grabbed me from behind, and she was trying to drag me back to her room. And
what?
I'm like, oh, I swear to God, it's crazy.
Brian? Wait, are you in a relationship, Brian?
Yes, I am.
Okay, then.
Okay, yeah, that's not okay then.
Yeah,
not okay.
Not okay. Yeah. Yes. Craig and I are a little bit concerned about some of the sound that we hear in the background. Is it just music, or are there also videos playing?
There are no videos playing. It's, at this point, it's just music. And this right here is like a VIP party. Only selected press was available to come. And all the porn stars are actually here. They've been here like for an hour. I just got here about 20 minutes ago. And it's a pretty wild party.
And he's VIP everywhere he goes right now, Brian, right? Like, you're getting into all the select things. You're VIP all the way out there.
Yeah, pretty much. whatever I want to do, I can pretty much do.
Nice.
So, by the way, if anyone wants to, you know, fly down to Vegas, you can go to the eventbrite.com for, you know, finding out how much tickets are for the AVN Awards. It's through the rest of the weekend, Saturday the 23rd through Sunday the 24th. And the tickets range from, for the upper balcony, it's $175. For a table of four, level one, it's $500. Now, where do you get to watch the awards from, Brian?
I will be actually in the audience with the rest of the press, so I'll be there with the starlets and stars.
What?
Now, yes.
What are you planning to wear? Do you have a tuxedo for this? What's the wardrobe of choice?
Okay, this is the AVN, so I got an invite to a party that I'm not going to, and it said clothing optional. So I don't think they're worried about what you wear to the award show.
Right.
So do you think there's a coat check?
No.
Like you give them all you just rip them off and go, here you go, for when you leave?
Right.
Yes. You know where you need to hang your coat.
Go ahead.
No, you're fine.
No, are the AVN Awards broadcast somewhere? So, like, if we're watching it, will we see you in the audience?
You should be able to see it on Vivid and, I believe, Penthouse. Don't quote me on that with Penthouse, but I know Vivid is going to stream it.
Now, Brian, I know you're being conscious of everything going on out there. You're going to keep it to an early night tonight. You're not going to miss the sex toy keynote tomorrow, right?
You know what? I played it late, super late last night. And,
okay.
And Ron Jeremy would not stop. And I was trying to go home, and he wouldn't stop. And so what was crazy about the after party, they had, like, a big, like, hot tub, and it was, like, four or five girls in this hot tub. He hops in. It was just crazy. And I'm looking like and I'm a pretty liberal dude. So when I saw it, and I'm looking like, oh, my God, it's crazy.
Man, so Brian, did WGN send you to the AVN Awards? I'm just curious, like, because I'm sure I'm trying to figure out how I'd like to get an invitation to this next year.
Well, I do a podcast, the Sean Green Show, that's on WGN Plus. Some of the interviews will go on WGN Plus, some cannot due to the content.
Right.
You can go to SeanGreenShow.com for the uncut stuff.
Nice.
So just booked it, and I suppose went last year, but it was just too chaotic last year, and I just said, screw it, and I said, you know, I'm going to do it this year, and here I am.
Yeah, I'm excited for you. I know if you're up for it, we should check in with you tomorrow, because I want to see, and then we have to talk to him again on Monday. So the name of your podcast is?
The Sean Green Show. It's on WGN Plus. Uh-huh.
That's wonderful. Now, do you have any favorites? Okay, so here's some of the names in the he mentioned the BBW Performer of the Year, Big Beautiful Women. We have there's Alexis Allure and Eliza Allure. Are they sisters?
I don't think so.
Okay.
My favorite from what I've seen, and this is probably the famous I can do is Busty Cookie.
Busty Cookies?
Busty Cookie.
Oh, not, how about Sasha Juggs?
Nah.
No, all right.
And I have just learned not to Google this stuff at work.
Research, Craig, research.
Research. Here, for the men, I think that Ryan Driller might have a chance, or possibly Tommy Pistol.
Well, Tommy Pistol. Give it to Tommy Pistol.
Tommy Pistol. Or Ryan Ryder. I don't know. He was in Peter Pan XXX there, Craig, just so you know.
Yeah. I think one of the coolest things, too, before you guys speak, the coolest things I did see was the rise of virtual reality.
Uh-huh.
In porn. I mean, it's making a big rise here because that was one of the more bigger booths that was here with the virtual reality. So it's a lot of that going on. And
that seems like a logical move, is the virtual reality porn.
Yeah, and it's stuff you can download on your phone is crazy. It was so much stuff that this one guy showed me. And I can only show you in person, but it's
was that guy crazy. Was that guy a part of the event, or was he just someone you found there?
Well, no, they a lot of vendors come here. So
okay, good. Just wanted to make sure.
You know what's missing in porn? You know what's missing in porn is choose your own ending.
Yeah.
That's
By the way, from our 630 texter, Brian cannot turn the music down. He is at a party because he lives the VIP lifestyle.
Yes. Well, we'll see. Oh, my God. What series? The best what series? Okay, we have to figure out what we can say on the air tomorrow. Brian, can we check in with you tomorrow?
Yes, you sure can.
Yeah, the adventures of producer Brian from the Rokan show and his podcast that you can find on WGN Plus and also on his website. Tell us the website again.
SeanGreenShow.com.
SeanGreenShow.com. How do you spell Sean?
S-E-A-N.
S-E-A-N. We'll make sure there's a couple different spellings. So S-E-A-N, SeanGreenShow.com. And we'll check in with him tomorrow and see what kind of music's playing then.
Yeah, we'll do.
Be happy. Enjoy yourself.
Oh, I will. I'm about to start drinking right now.
All right, get to it.
All right.
Thanks. See you later. Bye. Oh, man, that's great. I can't wait to talk to him again. Esmeralda, you're going to miss tomorrow's update.
Oh. I know. Well, I can listen.
Yes, you can.
WGNradio.com. That's 720 right. WGN.
More after this on 720 WGN or .com.
We didn't have time to talk about it. It did not make the show. It had to go. Maybe next time. I don't know. This is the end of the show. We gotta go. The end of the show. Go slow. No, we didn't get to it. We thought we had time, but we blew it.
Let's go ahead and you know what? It's Friday morning, and I just had an idea. I walked out of the studio, and I realized that I have a stash in my office that I decided to crack open and share with Craig. Esmeralda, I'm sorry you have to keep working, so I can't share any Jamesons with you. I just realized we should do a first toast Friday.
Yeah, that sounds fun.
We get to ring in Friday. Everyone's going to work, but we're going to bed. So hopefully, at some point.
Right, hopefully.
So cheers, Craig. Cheers, Esmeralda. Cheers.
Happy Friday.
Happy Friday, everybody. Happy Friday. Get through work and get yours done. Enjoy
yourselves.
Are we
breaking our rule, though, of saying that we still think it's Thursday until we go to bed by cheersing Friday now? We're cheersing the prospect of Friday to the people that think it's Friday.
We're toasting to you because we won't be able to talk to you before you go out after work. So we're
right.
Yes.
Happy Friday to you.
But for us, it's the end of Thursday.
There you go.
Yes. We're ringing in your Friday, saying goodbye to our Thursday.
I'm glad we ironed
that out. I haven't figured out this segment yet.
No, it's fine. It makes sense.
Yes, it makes sense to me. By the way, we didn't get a chance to talk about some of the categories very much. And the music that Brian was, you know, had in the background. He was at a big party in Vegas. It made me feel like I was there. So I know it frustrated some of you.
Yeah.
But I was like, you could smell the sex.
It was a select VIP party too. He said it was like the upper echelon of media and performers.
Yeah. So we didn't get a chance to talk about the categories as much because there are titles that obviously are not appropriate. I needed to look at them for a moment to see what I could say. I can't say that. The Booty Movie, I could say that that's up for an award. I could also say that, oh, no, I can't say that. Miss Tushy, I would like to know if you can guess the category.
What is the same?
What is the, one of these is like the other?
I
can't say that. All right then.
Intimate
Obsessions sounds like a quaint little story.
Yeah, that sounds like a Lifetime movie.
Oil Overload.
All right.
Then.
Not a Lifetime movie there.
Rough Enough.
Well, that could be anything.
Any really. Parody movies?
Oh, I don't.
Yeah. Those are my favorite.
Okay, hold on.
Star Wars. There's got to be Star Wars.
Oh, I definitely can't say that. Ooh, the X's and O's.
Oh.
I don't know.
Sounds like a drama.
Fluid 3 sounds like
that
something.
Sounded like something you shouldn't say.
You know, Barbarella XXX. That's
nice.
Avengers XXX2.
Oh, that makes sense.
An Axel Braun parody.
Okay.
Anchorwoman.
Oh. That's an Anchorman?
Nardians of the Galaxy. League of Frankenstein. That's just too much on the nose. Night at the Erotic Museum.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Saving Humanity? No, I guess not. No.
Okay, I mean, that's cool. That's a Will Smith movie?
Yeah. I think so, right?
Yeah.
Ms. Gray? I don't know what that means. Oh, Batman versus Superman, XXX.
There's not even a
what's
cool
that
title
look
there.
Like?
It's just XXX after the real title.
The Doctor. Kill Bill, a XXX parody. Yeah, none of those are really
Yeah,
like
that's not really clever, guys.
Oh, I can't say that. Shades of Kink 4.
All right.
I kind of want to see 1 through 3 before. Do you think that you need to see the
first
three?
No, for context?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
No? You can just jump right in and
You could probably try out any one you want.
Whipped Ass 8?
Wow.
Yeah. After 7, you're still back for more?
Really?
Okay.
That had to be painful at some point.
Oh, boy. Did we, was there anything we meant to get to, or did we get to it?
Amazon restaurant delivery launches in Chicago. Uber Eats preps expansion. So Amazon and Uber will deliver you food.
Oh. Yeah. Will they just put it right in my mouth, too?
I think if you ask the driver. Okay. Yeah. Extra tip. Is that a movie? It
would be a big tip for that one.
Yeah, so that's exciting. I mean, you know,
yeah.
Amazon will get us food now.
The food will get right to you.
Mm-hmm. Yes. More than half of Chicago wants Rahm out.
Okay. Do they know when that was possible? When? If only there was a moment in time when people had the ability to say, we don't want you to be our mayor, and half of you didn't show up. What half? Was it the half that didn't show up? Because if you didn't show up, I'm just saying, bummer. And people will say, oh, well, we didn't know about the video. There was plenty for you to know that already seemed a little sketchy. It all. Here's the thing. The guy we knew before April was the guy that's capable of keeping a video from being released. I'm sorry. I get a muscle spasm every time people are like, I don't want him to be our mayor anymore. Yeah. Ship sailed. April. Bye-bye.
There's also a Blackhawk fan that hasn't missed a game in 50 years. We got to get this guy on the show.
But does he wear a pink hat?
No.
Does he sit behind the backstop?
Wait, I don't think so.
Different sport.
Yeah, it's a different sport.
I'm excited about having Judd Surratt back on the show, too.
Yeah, Judd did a good job today.
I'm trying to figure out what kind of hockey questions to ask. I was all excited about the guy who missed practice.
Yeah, that was good. You really did a good job there.
My husband was very excited about that because it was like, you don't show up, you don't play, and then we lose. How do you not blame that guy, by the way? We haven't talked about this. How's that guy not the one that you don't blame for the...
They should have trotted him out for all the interviews.
He is equipment boy for the rest of the season.
Not going to play again.
No. Also, do you think it's because he was late, or do you think he was just sunning himself because it's so warm there?
Oh, right, because it was so miserable here for a while. Although, they just came from Nashville. Where I can't imagine.
Yeah, but it's Florida. It's very warm.
It is very nice down there. By the way, before we go, let me check in on what Nick Giglio has upcoming after 2 a.m. Nick is, you remember everything about the movie, the plot, the characters, the actors, everything but the name. Call in with a description, and Nick D and Jeff Tuckman will help you remember, plus your chance to win a box set featuring 60s sci-fi TV shows. That's coming
up. The Video Answer Man. That is awesome.
And also, Nick has two movies in February. My head's going to explode because I'm so excited. He's going to have Groundhog Day on Groundhog Day, and then he's got Scarface on a Saturday night in February. I think it's like the 27th, whatever that last Saturday is. We're going. The restaurant there is going to, Bogart's is doing Cuban sandwiches and mojitos. I'm so crazy excited about that.
Plus, I think you're still living off the high of Brian, too.
A little bit. Yeah. The music, I'm dancing a little bit.
Right.
20th, by the way.
The 20th. Thank you very much. So it's not the last Saturday. It's on the 20th. Thank you.